Okay, coming up next on Ham Nation, Gordon talks coax connectors. We have something that we're all going to face at some time, becoming a silent key, and what happens to the ham gear? But you haven't thought about that. Well, we have, and we're going to talk about it. Also, tonight, the first look with Ray Novak at the ICOM 9700. It's all coming up next, right now, on Ham Nation.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. Most in-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 399 for April 24th, 2019. First look, IC 9700.
Good evening, everybody. It's Bob Heil, and I'm in Pleasant Hope, Missouri. That's in the Ozarks, north of Springfield, out in the country. And it's really nice here, let me tell you. And it's good to be back because I'm in and out so much here lately. But I'm glad to be here, and we have a wonderful show. And you don't want to miss it. Ray is with George, and they are going to show us a brand new radio. I'm not sure that everybody's seen this, so you're going to see the unveiling of this radio. So we'll get into that in just a little bit. And Gordo's got some good stuff. Amanda's going to be here later on. And then Don's got Newsline, and I think he's got some great reports about what's going up in the sky. So let's see who all is around. Gordon, are you here? How are things in California?
All is well in California, and in the North Central Indiana area, the 15th annual North Central Indiana Ham Fest, Miami County 4-H Fairgrounds in Peru, Indiana, this coming Saturday. So check it out if you're looking for a great ham fest. And best success per John W2HCB with the Great South Bay Amateur Radio Club. They're teaching a class this Saturday to the New York Police Department. Well, luckily they're using the Gordo book, but it should be a fun class. Best success to Kevin AB2 Zulu India, the instructor. But you know, the big deal is going on in Babylon, and that is where they're going to set up and have Marconi Day on this coming Saturday. And on Saturday, Marconi Spirit returns to the South Shore Marina as a Long Island CW club and the Great South Bay Amateur Radio Club come together for Marconi Day. So you clubs, have a great day. Back to you, Bob.
Okay. All sounds good. All sounds good. And what's going on down in, I guess you'll just call it Lower Mississippi, right? Don Wilbanks, how you doing?
Alabama has an upper and a lower. Down in Mississippi, we have north and south. So, yeah, South Mississippi is fine. Down along the glorious Gulf Coast, well, about 50 miles inland. Had a great day today. In fact, it's been glorious weather pretty much all week. Supposed to rain tomorrow. Not like the rain that the Dallas is getting, though. Man, some bad news at Love Field. The people parked on the lower parking garage at Love Field. Sorry, your cars may not be there. But all is well here. We've got a great weather report from Dr. T. And want to say hello to our WTWW listeners on 5085 and 15.810. If you've got ham radio related stuff you'd like WTWW to talk about, they're more than happy to hear about it and pass it on. Email at WTWW.us. Thanks to Ted and family for everything they do for us here on Ham Nation. And for ham radio, just in general, a great resource, that big 100,000 watt plus shortwave WTWW. Great friends of ham radio, and particularly great friends of Ham Nation, Bob.
They sure are. Love those. Love the whole family. Every one of them are just super people. And let's see what's happening before the unveiling. George, how are you and Ray doing?
Ray and I are doing good, Bob. He's been here all week, and we've been playing with radios. What more fun events could you ask for?
And we got rid of Tommy.
We got rid of Tommy. He was only here Monday night, and then we had to ship him to Connecticut or someplace like that.
So now it's more one-on-one at this point. I think I'm leaving here with this radio tonight.
Yeah, I understand we're going to be neighbors at Hamvention this year.
Yes, we will be.
Okay. Cool. Back to you, Bob.
You think you're going to get out of there. Oh, golly. Well, listen, we're looking forward to seeing that new radio. We're going to have a lot of stuff going on at Dayton, Xenia. And I think next week, Michael Coulter will be with us for a little bit and talk about some of the new things that are in store for us. However, next week, write it down on your calendar with the big red pen. It's our 400th show. Can you believe this? Four? Whoa, that's amazing. Wow. So we're going to be having fun and reliving some of that. But we have a lot of very special guests. And so you don't want to miss it. And you don't want to be staring at the chat room too much because you're going to miss a lot of things. There's going to be some celebs here. And it's just going to be really good for number 400. So be looking forward to seeing everybody on the other side of the screen next week. But real quickly, I want to run through a couple of things here. First of all, I got this picture. Check this out. Does anybody know this guy? This is Simon. He's in the chat room a lot from down under. And this was, I think, one of his CB days years back. And I just thought I'd let you see what Simon looked like back in those days. I got a really nice picture of Holly. Holly Smith, her and her husband are here in the Ozarks. They have a company called hamcrazy.com. You guys and gals might have bought from them before. But she attended one of my forums at Branson and got all really enthused. And she went and passed her license and got upgraded. So congratulations, Holly. That's really cool. And she wrote me a nice letter and told me that she got really enthused sitting in my workshop. But I don't care how you did it. I'm just glad you did it. So there. Now, Craig is going to come home to a cold stove and a hot transmitter. I told you that, Craig, so just remember. I'm going to spend a couple of minutes. It was only interesting. This week, I received, it was around a dozen emails about the same subject. Isn't that something? How do I plug one of the PR40s or 22s or any of our dynamic mics into a computer? Well, you can't. You can't just plug a microphone into a computer. Now, you can if you do the right thing. Here's one of our headsets. It's called the ProSet Media. You can do that to most all of the computers. You just plug her straight in, and that works okay. But I'm here to tell you, if you really want to do it, spend a little bit of money, and you go out and buy a Focusrite. For number one, this is a great piece. It's called, they've got two of them called the Scarlet and the Claret. And this is a USB interface. Now you have to understand that microphone is producing analog audio and you need to turn it into something digital. And that's what that little red box does. And it does it very well. And then we have this wonderful. This is my favorite because this is what all the hosts here use. We all have the Elises, and the Elises is an 8-channel mixer. And you say, what do I need all that for? You'd be surprised. Sometimes you run out of channels. You get things going, and you can plug all kinds of microphones and CD decks or whatever, and that works great. the Elises. I'll give you a list here in just a second of all this. But here's a new one that I relatively knew. It's been around a while, but not a lot of people using it yet. Look at this little guy. This little guy's about $75. It's one microphone and one line input. And really, for a lot, that's all I need. And it works really good. It's got some equalization with it, and it's just great. I love this little box, and it's not expensive at all. So get your pencil out, and here you go. Here's what we're looking at. We're looking at the Focusrite Claret. That little guy's $479. And you go, whoa, wait a minute. But it's got FireWire, and it's really for the guys doing top jar recording of music and stuff. The Claret that I just showed you, that little guy is beautiful. And the Claret is pretty close to, I got them backward. The Claret is $479. That's right. That baby is around $480. The Scarlet is $179. That's what most of the folks are using, the little Scarlet. Looks just like it, and it works really good. And then the Elises, the Multimix 8, is $100. You get on anywhere from Eham to eBay to the different dealers, you'll find them all over the map for $100. And then the Behringer, that little guy, $75 or $80, and it works really good. Because all you're looking for is to take that analog signal from the microphone and make it a digital signal. And that's just what it does. And it works really good. So I hope that helps a few of you, because I got all these emails. They all wanted to know the same thing. So there we answered a whole bunch of folks at the same time. So I am always glad to receive stuff, and I answer all of you. So there, I didn't have to answer you. I answered you here. I hope you're watching. I'm sure you are, because you said you watch. So, all right. Well, that's all I have for right now. So let's go see what Gordon's got. And I know he's got some exciting stuff. So WB6NOA, it's all yours, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Bob. And speaking of email, boy, I got a bunch with folks saying that LED noise is indeed a real problem, but especially up on the 2-meter band, W7YOZ, he had a no LED noise of 113 dBm, and it went down to 99 when he turned on his porch LED light. Another fellow says, Bob, WA6NFJ, says he, by experimenting with different light bulbs, was able to finally get his noise down to being very reasonable. And another fellow, Don, says that to prevent LED noise from coming out of chopper circuits, get rid of the chopper for a 12-volt LED and use a 10K audio taper pot, and that potentiometer will solve the problems. Well, let's take a quick look at another noise source, and this is one that we had out at Quartz Fest, and what it is a 300-watt, and it's a very nice sine wave power inverter with a very, very nice pattern that we saw on the scope, but not so nice when we heard it on the air. Well, the big cure is remove, and thanks to Ray, WA6NVL, for this. He's an EMI EMC engineer. He says remove the four Phillips screws, unsnap the side snaps on this little power inverter with a small blade screwdriver, remove the bottom plate, remove the four Phillips screws holding the board in the case, lift the case, and tighten the heat sink. What he was saying was that there were loose screws on the heat sink, and the heat sink that pulls on the bar that pulls the switching transistors to the heat sink, and they were loosey-goosey. After he did a tightening job, the noise just about disappeared. So if you've got something that's creating a lot of noise, take that mama apart and get ready to roll. Well, we also had a couple of weeks ago several folks drive by with mobile antennas that weren't working, and two of them had the same exact problems. They were missing this. And what this is the nylon keeper that keeps the top part on the right from shorting out to the base, which we're holding on the left on a mobile 3H24 mount. So this is the way it should go. So if you've recently changed out your mobile whips with a 3H24 base and they're not doing quite as well, in fact, they aren't doing squat, you may have this little keeper that keeps that brass part centered. It may be shorted to ground. Now, on the PL259 type of antennas, Diamond makes some great ones. The Diamond mount is a good, the K400, but again, on the bottom side of that mount, make sure you have four Allen screws digging into the metal of the trunk lid. It has to see that trunk lid as the ground plane. Another fella came by saying, my antenna, I said, don't even tell me, it's not loading. Yep, that's right. And all you're hearing is this static. He says, yep, that's right. What we have here is the bar that this mount is mounted to is indeed DC grounded to the top of the vehicle. We measured that. But it's the capacity between the base of the mount and all of the metal roof, the X sub C, that is causing it not to load. So if you're going to attach a high-frequency whip to a roof rack, remember, you're probably going to need some sort of antenna matcher to get it to load properly. On VHF and UHF, no problem. Well, on VHF and UHF, we got to make sure we've got a good solid connection on the left and all the way to the right are just different types of connectors, BNC, PL259, N connector, SMA, and then that's the TV, I think they call them the F connector. Take a look at your PL259s, unscrew the barrel, and if, as long as you see good solder job that is affixing the braid to the adapter, which is the part sticking out, then you're okay. But wiggle that UG255 or 256 coaxial cable adapter real close to my fingers. And if it unscrews, then you need to again do a solder job to make sure that the braid indeed gets soldered to that connector. I would also take a little file and clean up the tip of that PL259. And one fella said, well, his antenna was measuring a short. Well, anytime you have an HF antenna with a ballon on it, yep, it's going to probably look a short to a regular DC meter. But at RF frequencies, you would want to use an SWR meter. And this one is both a forward power meter as well as a reflected power meter and will quickly show up as a low SWR if everything is fine. Well, after the winter, we've all had a heck of a winter, you may want to take a look and see what's beneath the coax cable black tape. Ugh, this is not good. What occurs is rainwater or snow water or whatever water will begin to migrate down the screw threads of the barrel connector, get into the outside braid of the coax, and ultimately kill the braid. This one, we couldn't even unscrew it because it is welded shut and it had very high resistance that we did measure with a DC meter with a circuit out of line to the radio below. And never, never, never have any kind of an antenna where you leave the connection bare like this. Yeah, you got to solder it this way, but after you get through soldering it and you mount the antenna to the block, make sure that you cover it with a coax seal or a flexible seal. And on the homebrew choke that we see there, many times on a beam antenna, where the active elements are isolated from the boom that you see here, you want that choke about an inch off of the mount. If it's resting right on the center of that antenna structure, The boom is going to detune that particular circuit, trying to get rid of the SWR. So always make sure and elevate that with something non-conductive, and you'll be ready to roll. And finally, if you got a whole bunch of coaxes, as I do, going up to the roof, and you don't know which coax goes where, take out either your analog or your digital meter, and you'll notice that on R times, let's say you go R times 10,000 or R times 5,000, you'll see that your fingers will give about a half meter reading. Well, your fingers are attached to you, and you're only at one end. So here's what I do. I take a big capacitor, and I tie that capacitor into the free end of the coax with alligator clips. And then down at the shack with my ohm meter, I will look. And when I see the ohm meter flick up and then decrease rapidly, that tells me I found the correct coax that goes up to the roof that I'm trying to identify. So we hope all of you have a great time now that the sun is finally coming out and it's getting warmer, to clean up your HF installations. And I'll look forward to seeing you all next week, our 400th. So, Don, now what's happening with you and DX Engineering?
Well, very timely stuff, Gordon. You're talking all about coax and the care and feeding thereof. If you're looking for a smart way to improve your station performance without making a big investment, best place to start is quality coaxial connectors, oddly enough, from DX Engineering. They make it very easy by offering three ways to get exactly what you need. First off, save the time and hassle of assembling your own coax cables by using DX Engineering's Custom Cable Builder. Just go to dxengineering.com, click on the Custom Cable Builder box on the homepage. Really easy to use. In just a few clicks, you can receive the type of coaxial cable you need with your choice of connectors on each end, and the precise length you want from 1 foot to 300 feet. Of course, you get a high-quality product because it's DX Engineering. Before arriving at your shack, every cable is expertly assembled, high-pot and continuity tested, and finished with weather seal heat shrink for superb longevity. I have seen them do this in person. And let me tell you something. If it's not exactly perfect, they chuck it and start over again. You get your order fast, too. The cables are shipped within one business day of your purchase. Let's say you don't need a custom cable. Well, DX Engineering has pre-made cable assemblies in a variety of types and lengths. A couple of options for you. The DX Engineering RG213U PL259 low-loss 50-ohm assemblies are a solid choice for HF feed line. They give you excellent HF shielding with minimum 96% coverage copper braid. The assemblies come with DX Engineering's patented crimp solder 8X PL259 connectors on both ends. They're available in lengths from 3 feet to 200 feet. When you need extreme high isolation from noise and signals, the DX Engineering RG400 high isolation coaxial assemblies are just what you need. RG400 assemblies come with soldered 83I1SP connectors on both ends. They're available in lengths of 3, 6, and 10 feet. And if you're a roll-your-own kind of guy, DX Engineering offers cable sold by the foot and by the roll up to 1,000 feet, plus cable preparation tools like strippers and grippers, and complete kits to make assemblies and installation easy. Of course, the wide selection of coaxial cables and adapters. And I got an email from Mr. DX himself, Tim Duffy, today. He said, Don, let people know that lots of RG8X lengths with attached connectors installed right now are 25% off the regular price this week only. It's the deal of the week. So if you need some coaxial cable, go check that out. RG8X, lots of lengths with coaxial connectors installed, 25% off the regular price, the deal of the week from DX Engineering. And DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. Most orders ship by 10 p.m. Eastern are shipped the same day. Proven products, expert advice. DX Engineering helps you shrink the globe. Request your catalog or shop online 24/7 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. And, of course, we thank DX Engineering for their support of Ham Nation. Can you believe 400 episodes next week? Wow. And a lady who's been with us for not all of those 400s, but for a good while now, and she's become the darling of ham radio, is Dr. Tamitha Scove. And we will have her solar report coming up right after this news from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2164, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, April 24th, 2019. First up, two reports that remind us that ham radio saves lives, and that sometimes ham radio operators, even without their radios, help save lives.
As close to 1,400 runners stepped off on April 6th for the Springfield, Illinois Half Marathon, local hams assembled as a support team for the event. Little did anyone know at the start of the race that in less than 2 hours, seven runners would suffer a range of medical issues. Planning and professionalism made all the difference for the team. It is commonly said that amateur radio operators are not the first responders, but the first responders can be hams, and because of that, several people are alive today. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Paul Brown, WD9GCO.
Meanwhile, in Hawaii, one amateur radio operator was in the right place at the right time, in his own home, when disaster struck.
An amateur radio operator who was once a volunteer forest firefighter is being credited with quick thinking after a neighbour's house in Waipahu erupted in flames earlier this month. Zeph McNaughton, N7WAP, told local media the smell of smoke awakened him in the early morning hours of April 11th, and he ran to the house, pounding on the door to get the occupants to evacuate. By the time 35 firefighters arrived at the two-alarm blaze, Zeph had already begun hosing down the burning house as well as nearby homes. He remained on the scene until firefighting teams arrived. The Honolulu Fire Department said 15 people were displaced and were assisted by the American Red Cross. No major injuries were reported. The fire was extinguished by 3:15 a.m. The Honolulu Fire Department captain told the Star Advertiser newspaper that the building did not have any working smoke alarms. Zeph, an extra-class licensee, was treated by emergency medical services for smoke inhalation but refused further treatment, according to the Star Advertiser. The report said his home was one of two that sustained smoke damage. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jason Daniels, VK2LAW.
You may not have heard K2BSA on the air lately, but these radio scouts have been busy.
This week in Radio Scouting, we're well into two countdowns for Jamboree on the Air and World Scout Jamboree. While activations have been quiet on the calendars, we've been busy talking to many radio scouters looking forward to this year's Jamboree on the Air, which is only 6 months away. April is the month that you recruit scouts for your summer field day plans and solidify your plans for October with the Troop Crew Pack District or Council. You can also prepare to help activate a scout's summer camp. Jamboree on the Air, the largest international scouting event, has been held the third full weekend of October since 1957. World Scout Jamboree has passed the 100-day mark, and we're all getting really excited to activate the Summit Pectoral Reserve as an A1WJ. The team is getting to know each other better through team training and conference calls, and we're happy that most of our initial plans are still in the works. We did have to move our ARDF component over to the orienteering section of the summit, but so far we're still going to have the demonstration station, balloon launches, and a contact with the International Space Station at Summit Center. If you want to help from your shack, join our mailing list over on groups.io. Just search up NA1WJ. For more information on this and radio scouting, please visit our website at k2bsa.net. For Amateur Radio Newsline and the K2BSA Amateur Radio Association, this is Bill Stearns, NE4RD.
The nominating period for the Newsline WA6ITF Young Ham of the Year Award is still open. Full details and the nominating form can be found on our website, arnewsline.org, under the YHOTY tab. Nominations close May 31st at midnight Eastern Time. We'll present the award in August at the Huntsville Ham Fest in Alabama. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Paul Brown, WD9GCO, Jason Daniels, VK2LAW, Bill Stearns, NE4RD, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now, here's the solar update from Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
We're getting hit by some pockets of fast solar wind from some coronal holes that are rotating through the Earth's strike zone, and it could bring us more aurora. And, did you feel that? That was an earthquake. No, wait. That wasn't here. It was on Mars. Those stories and more in the news this week. Space weather this week is definitely picking up. We have a massive remnant coronal hole region that's going to be rotating through the Earth's strike zone. Now, this region's actually comprised of several smaller coronal holes, and so that means that we're going to be getting some sporadic fast wind and kind of like pockets. So it's going to be more like in fits and starts. Now, this unfortunately means that we won't likely bump up to storm levels. We could see some decent aurora at high latitudes, but if it makes mid latitudes, well, it's just going to be a skosh here and there. But it could easily happen over the next few days, so your aurora photographers definitely stay on your toes. Now, unfortunately, we also have a very spotless sun right now, so the radio propagation is once again tanked. We're back into the low or the high 60s for solar flux. So amateur radio operators and emergency responders, you're just going to have to deal with it. At least we do know that the massive region 2738 is still alive and kicking. It actually shut off a solar storm on the sun's backside, and we could start seeing that rotate back into stereo's view here in the next couple days. Switching to your M-flare threat meter, you can see we continue to be extremely low when it comes to the X-ray flux, and therefore by proxy, our solar flux is also low. Now, back on the 14th, you really see that X-ray flux begin to dive. This was when region 2738 rotated to the sun's backside, and it continued to stay really low. We dropped back down into the high 60s for solar flux levels, which means poor radio propagation for amateur radio, shortwave, and emergency responders. Now, on the 18th, you do see kind of a weird little jump up in one of the channels there. Don't worry about that. That is just simply a data recalibration. They do this periodically to make sure the different satellites are in calibration. So nothing funny happened on the sun there. Unfortunately, we're still at low radio propagation. And this is easily going to continue over the next week, possibly even 10 days before we see a bit of a reprieve. Switching to your solar storm conditions, as you can see, over the past 10 days or so, we've really been hitting only about unsettled conditions, even though we've been hit by pockets of fast solar wind over and over again. And the reason for this is that the fast solar wind isn't nearly as strong, and it doesn't last nearly as long because the coronal holes driving it are getting smaller and smaller as we continue moving through this solar minimum sun. And unfortunately, the pockets of fast solar wind we're going to get hit by, we're already beginning to see the effects, and it's only bumped us back up to unsettled conditions once again. So likely we're not going to reach storm levels from this set of pockets of fast solar wind, and we're just going to be kind of bouncing around between quiet and unsettled conditions easily over the next few days. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are anticipating the hit from some more fast solar wind from the shrinking coronal holes that are rotating through the Earth's strike zone. Now, at high latitudes, NOAA is expecting minor storm conditions with up to about a 30% chance of a major storm, but don't expect these types of conditions to last. Literally over the next day or so, things will diminish quite rapidly. Now, at mid-latitudes, we're only expecting unsettled conditions with up to about a 35% chance of active conditions. But again, don't expect these conditions to last very long at all. So aurora may be very fleeting, especially at mid-latitudes. And then as we move in through the weekend, things should pretty much go back to being quiet. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, we have a spotless sun yet again, and so everything is in the green when it comes to solar flares. We have absolutely no risk for big flares or radio blackouts right now. And GPS users, you should be extremely happy. The solar flux is sitting in the high 60s again, so it's very low, and that means your GPS reception should be great on Earth's dayside, even at low latitudes. Now, amateur radio and shortwave radio responders, well, you guys aren't quite so happy with the low 60s. This means poor radio propagation once again on Earth's day side for you, and it will continue to be so easily over this next week and possibly 2 weeks before we get a reprieve. Now, also because we do have our solar minimum sun, we are getting more cosmic ray flux than we normally would have. So you frequent flyers, and this does include you air crew who fly over 800 hours annually and fly at high latitudes and high altitudes, you are in the marginal range for radiation dose, and this does include you prenatal passengers, so please take this into consideration in your flight plans. So the space weather this week is definitely picking up. We have a remnant coronal hole region that's rotating in through the Earth's strike zone, and it could be sending us some fits and starts of some fast solar wind, but don't expect the fast solar wind to last all that long. So your aurora photographers, well, you're really going to have to stay on your toes because aurora could be very fleeting. Now, as far as you amateur radio and shortwave radio responders go, well, we have a spotless sun this week, so that doesn't look too good for us. However, these really weak solar storms oftentimes can give us a little bit of a boost on radio propagation, on even on Earth's day side. And night side should be a little bit better than normal simply because we have that disturbed solar wind that's going to be helping us along. So until region 2739 rotates back into Earth view, which could easily be about another 2 weeks or so, hopefully this will give you a little bit of a reprieve and kind of alleviate some of the pain of poor radio propagation. Now, at least on the good side, the GPS users, well, you guys love low solar flux, so your GPS reception on Earth's day side should look fantastic, even at low latitudes. So enjoy for the time being, and as long as you stay away from the dawn dust terminators and away from aurora if you find it, you should have no problem with reception. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thanks for watching.
Thanks, Dr. T. Good to have you along with us. And one reason why you should subscribe to her on Twitter, I almost always have to edit her report for time. I had to pull the information out about the Mars quake and also some lunar information as well. So if you go check her out on Twitter and also her YouTube channel under Tamitha Scove, you'll get the full report. And that's something I'm going to watch as soon as we get done here because I haven't seen the full report either. I just saw little bits and pieces when I had to cut little bits and pieces out. And I hate having to do that, but that's the way it goes. We only have an hour. And wish we could get it all in, but I try to give you all the amateur radio related stuff that there is. So there you go. That's what her Twitter feed looks like. Go in and check that out. If you don't subscribe, there's something wrong with it. We don't want you in the house. Speaking of something wrong with them and don't want them in the house, we've got Ray and George coming up next right after this word from ICOM.
Create your own band opening with the IC9700. ICOM's newest SDR transceiver, the IC9700, this new radio is bringing direct sampling to the UHF-VHF weak signal world. The IC9700 all-mode transceiver is loaded with innovative features, such as dedicated amateur satellite operation, color touchscreen, built-in D-Star capability, RF direct sampling on 2 meters and 70 centimeter bands, dual independent receivers capable of full duplex operation as well as dual watch, 100 watts maximum output power on 2 meters, 75 watts max on 70 centimeters, and 10 watts max on 1.2 gigahertz. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
Attention all hams!
ICOM knows that ham clubs play a big role in bringing ham communities together to learn from their peers and industry leaders. As a way to give back and help you on your mission, ICOM has launched a promotion exclusively for U.S. ham clubs and the ham fest they're involved with. By registering your club, you could win ICOM swag, a Skype presentation for your club, or your ham fest, an ICOM booth setup. Register today for your chance to win at icomamerica.com/hams. Pack your bags because Dayton Hamvention is coming up from May 17th through 19th at the Greene County Fairgrounds and Expo Center in Xenia, Ohio. See the latest and greatest ICOM gear and meet hams from all over the world.
You know, if you're going to Hamvention this year, I want you to go, go to icomamerica.com/amateur and register for one of the great swag prize packages. We've got one of the 2018 ones right here, just a few of the items that were in it. You could become a lucky winner and get a limited edition ICOM swag kit for Hamvention 2019 by visiting ICOM's website, icomamerica.com/amateur. Get the details there and register to win. And ICOM invites you to enter in the weekly grand prize drawing, too, for a new radio. They've got great swag prizes that you could be a weekly winner of, or you could win the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And they got a great radio for April here. It's the ID5100A Deluxe, innovative 2-meter, 70-centimeter mobile with touchscreen. It's got built-in D-Star and analog, built-in GPS, DVDV dual watch. There's an optional Bluetooth board available, and there's downloadable Bluetooth and Android apps available. So go to iComAmerica.com/HamNation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up. Good luck. And don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And with me right here tonight is our most notable ICOM representative, Ray Novak. Hi, Ray.
I'm real impressed here. Get to see Don do that same thing as well as you, and just amazes me how you guys handle all of that.
After you've done it about, 399 times, you kind of memorize part of what you're going to say anyway.
There you go.
And you may say the wrong thing because of that, but if it changes. But, yeah, Ray, it's good to have you with us here tonight.
I've enjoyed it. I think this is the third night in a row that I've been out here, and we've shot video on something.
It is, yeah, third night in a row. And we started here Monday night. We had Tommy with us, and we shot video on this radio right here, the new IC9700. I'm going to tell you, Ray, I kind of like having that radio right here on my table. So if you would like to leave it, that would be fine with me.
It's been interesting. When we first came here, George, you're like, yeah, I really don't see where I need one of those or where I'd really want one. But it's been fun last night and tonight just tooling around to see what's on 2 meters around here.
Oh, yeah. Last night we just hooked it up to play some. And, interesting to see what was there. Without a band scope, I wouldn't have known these signals were going on. I mean, I would have thought, well, just a dead band tonight because nothing's on any of my memory channels when I scan. But no, there's a lot of stuff happening on there in between. I found, we found a couple of new repeaters I didn't even know about.
A couple of new repeaters. We talked to a couple of guys about 30 to 50 miles out on Simplex on FM, and it was interesting. If you'd have scanned across the 2 meter band, you probably wouldn't have picked them up.
Yeah.
Because you'd have had the squelch set up too high, and we just saw a little trace coming down the screen. I'm going, that's a signal there. Punch it. And it pulled up, and we're hearing these two guys talk about fishing.
Yeah. And right now we're on, this is a local D-Star repeater here, W5DRA, that is the one that I hang out on normally, but I know right now he's got the repeater down and he's been doing some maintenance, and apparently he's got it on the air from his house. It's not much of a signal there, but I didn't even know it. It sounded, since it's on D-Star, it sounded like it always does. So, I didn't realize he was on the air until, and testing there until we just happened to see him on the BAMSCOPE a minute ago.
Yeah, his receive antenna is probably a little bit low, but there you go. We get to see this guy's call sign and that he was using a ID880 from the text coming across the screen. But it's been fun. I know Tommy said that there were login chains that tie me up, but since he's not here tonight, I'm leaving with it.
Yeah, you're taking this one. Is this one going to Dayton?
Yes, sir, it will be. We'll be boxing it up and shipping it out probably towards the end of next week.
Yeah. I got to say, it's a really nice radio. I mean, at first glance, you would think maybe that was an IC7300 until you look at the numbers here and you notice, wait a minute, that's...
There's an extra digit in the megahertz.
Yep, exactly. So this would be a great radio... Well, of course, the contesters are all going to want this, the VHF contest guys. But anybody really serious about VHF, UHF, and it's not just, 2 meters and 70 centimeters.
Nope.
This one's got 1.2 gigs already built in.
And it's interesting. We also have the RSBA1 server in it. So Tommy made a comment that he could check in on the local repeaters here when he's traveling.
Right. And that's, I didn't know that was coming.
So you can do it on your 7700. He can do it on VHF and UHF.
Yeah.
He'll have to give you the login information.
Well, he will. Exactly. Nice radio. especially for those really serious about VHF and UHF. It's a software-defined radio, of course, and we're going to have a lot more information. I'll be telling you about this soon. We'll be releasing the video. I'll let you know where you can go watch it. We've shot, I don't know, we're having such a good time. We probably got almost 2 hours worth of video, so I've got to narrow it down to just really the important stuff.
Actually, we got close to 4 hours, but I think an hour and a half of it was without you, Mike.
Oh, yeah, I had the microphone cable slung over my shoulder. I was wearing a lavalier, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we kind of had to redo part of it.
Yeah, we were talking about whether we should have done it live stream or not do it live stream. If we'd have done it live stream, the chat room would have let us know, hey, somebody's mic's not right.
Yeah, we can't hear George. Well, great radio. Congratulations again to ICOM. And we compared it to what would be the most comparable radio to this, and that was, what, the IC910H?
Yes, sir. That would have been what we would call the direct replacement for it because it was a 2-meter 440 only. It did have an optional 1.2. But I think there might need to be one at the Heil QTH so he can answer all those questions about what headset to use, what microphone settings, what equalizer settings, and things like that. So, Bob, I'm going to have to get together with you on that.
Yeah. Yeah, he can go in and fine tweak the audio and find out just how it ought to be.
Yes, sir.
Because things sound different on VHF and UHF than they do on HF. But I didn't know that you could even, it never occurred to me that you could even do DSP on VHF and UHF radios. We were talking about that last night, and I had ignored the fact that I had that on my IC7000. But anyway.
And one of the other things, we did see that you had some 2-meter noise. So Gordo's tip earlier, it might be some LED lights around here.
It could be. I see they're not on tonight. It's a pretty quiet looking band there. But yeah, Monday night it was pretty bad. Oh, there was a little bit
of that pop. Right. It was a pulsing pop noise that, like what we're seeing right now.
Yeah. You know, otherwise I wouldn't even known that was there other than I can't hear the weak signal I'm trying to hear because of the noise.
Now, you mentioned about it sounding different. I just recently had an experience where everything did sound a little bit different. And that was doing my first ham fest or visiting my first ham fest up in Canada.
Oh, yeah, you did. And yeah, those guys sounded like they were from up north.
Yes, sir.
We've got a little video here. If Victor will play the clip from the Peel Amateur Radio Club.
That was a club. They do a lot of kit building. So, Bob, I think you'll like some of the stuff that they've cranked out.
Bob Gordo, this is Ray, N9JA, here in Canada for a ham fest that they call HamX. I ran into a fan of ours, and he's going to tell us about his booth.
This is Dave E3OI, and I'm a member of the Peel Amateur Radio Club, and we're a club based out of Brampton, Ontario, and we do, you know, the typical things ham radio clubs do, airies, and we get together and we do, you know, our events, but one of the key things we do is get together, have a build-a-thon, and we build a certain piece of equipment. These are some of the kits we've built in the past. And this year, we're actually going to be building something called a signal generator. I'm sure most of you know what that is. But we'll be building that, and we're able to generate signals from three different clock outputs. And we'll be able to generate out of one clock output a signal from 1.5 kilohertz to 225 megahertz. And the other thing we'll be able to do is generate quadrature signals. So this is really good if you're experimenting and building SDR radios. So we're going to be building this coming up in May, and it's available to our members. And these are the kinds of projects that we build. Those are prototype boards, and the actual production board, we're going to be sending it off to a fabrication plant to have the board built for us.
Looks a little bit different than Bob's pine board.
I know. It all stems from that, but I agree 100% with what Bob always says, that, you know, the art of actually building, that's a key thing in amateur radio, is that, and I think a lot of people are losing that. And here at the Park Club, we embrace that, and we bring the building back into amateur radio.
Well, they look like very fun kits, and I hope you guys have a lot of fun building them. Is there a website that they can go to take a look at?
Absolutely. If you Google Peel Amateur Radio Club.
And that's P-E-E-L, Peel.
Peel Amateur Radio Club. It's
PeelARC.org.
Here's our logo.
Oh, wait
here.
A minute. We hit it right there?
Yeah. It's PeelARC.org.
PeelARC.org.
Ray, those guys look like they're having a lot of fun up there.
Yeah, they did, and it was a learning experience for me as well on how to hold the camera next time to fill the screen.
Yeah,
and the other side. Pay a little bit more attention to the audio levels. But it was a fun ham fest, and walking around, it was interesting. Guys recognized me from being on Ham Nation, not so much the ICOM logo, but, hey, I've seen you on Ham Nation. Come over here and look at what we're doing. There was one guy there that had an ID 5100. He had bought a $10 kit for Bluetooth and had made his own Bluetooth adapter for the 5100 where he could remote control it using his Android device.
Well, it looks like those guys are really having a great time. And, building stuff, experimenting, and they're probably mentoring a lot of folks with those kits that they've got going there.
And they are, and they're not afraid to dive off into the surface mount stuff from the looks of some of the kits that they had there.
Yeah, cool. Well, Ray, we appreciate you being here with us tonight. Why don't you hang around a few minutes? And I don't know if Amanda's got any questions in the chat room there, but it's a possibility she does.
Sounds good to me.
Okay. And I want to remind you that Randy wants to know what you've been building. Send him your photos and descriptions, no videos, please, of what you've been building or soldering on or wrenching or welding to hamprojects@twit.tv. And you could be in a future episode of Show Us Your Project. As a matter of fact, I know we should have one of those next week because he had one ready that he got done yesterday, I believe. So we'll be seeing that soon. And that's it for me. And I think we have somebody from Kansas with us tonight. A guy that...
Hi, George. There he is. Hi, Ray. Hi. Good to see you guys. Interesting segment there. Love the look at the radios. And we're going to jump right in here. First time here in several weeks, but we've got two videos for you, and we'll start on a serious note. We've got an outstanding tutorial video from Dan, N9LVS. He's going to show us how to do an amateur radio estate sale. So here's Dan.
This video I've entitled Amateur Radio Estate Sale, How To. Although few of us want to talk about it, all of us will end up as a silent key. It's just inevitable. One thing that we all should consider, what's going to happen to our ham gear once we're gone? I have had the honor, and yes, it's an honor, to sell a departed ham's radio equipment once they have departed. First of all, you hope the amateur radio operator has a last will and testament. Unfortunately, most hams never put their equipment in there. So what to do with the equipment? The right way to do it is have an estate sale. But when it comes to amateur radio equipment, it has to be a little different. What I usually have done, though I prefer to have something prearranged, I usually ask one of the members of the family, and I kind of phrase it like this. After giving my condolences to the family, I just ask a simple question. Have arrangements been made regarding so-and-so's amateur radio equipment? Usually you'll get a no. The next thing that I tell them is I'm willing to help the family take care of that burden. In the few times that I've actually done this, you actually get a sign of relief. In the coming days, I always set up an appointment to go over and visit and figure out what the best plan is. Once it's agreed on to help the family with the equipment, I do two things. First of all, I make up a contract, basically stating, I'm here to take care of the amateur radio equipment. The reason I do a contract is that way there is no question as to what my purpose is. In one case, we set it up so that when the equipment was sold, the family had to agree on the price. In another case, I was asked to get the best price. In either case, I feel a contract is necessary. So now what about the equipment? Okay, here's where the spreadsheet comes in. First of all, I write down all the equipment, and I do mean all. In my example, I'm only showing the radios themselves, and I always use a Google Doc and share it with the family. First question I ask about the equipment, was it connected? And usually in most cases, you'll be able to answer that yourself. Second question is, does it work? There's a lot of ham radio operators out there that have old vintage equipment that doesn't work, but we just continue to hold on to it. The next question is it complete? Or is there stuff missing? Or what kind of condition is it in? Next thing I do is the value. Since most of this equipment is used and most likely discontinued, that can be the most difficult part of the whole process. There is a few places that I go to get value. Swap.qth.com, eham.com, and even eBay, although I will never sell a piece of equipment on eBay. Once the item is sold, I make a copy of the receipt as well as a copy of the payment. Also in the remarks area, I put where it was sold and maybe a description of why it was sold at that price. Then the only thing left to do, once everything is sold, is to present the check to the family. I always give them all the receipts, including the spreadsheet, so they have proper documentation for the sale. Doing an estate sale is not a fun job, but it is an honor and should be treated as such. I hope this video has been helpful. N73 from N9LVS.
Thank you, Dan. We appreciate all the work you do, especially the videos you produce for our Ham Nation video segment. And we also appreciate the work you do maintaining the Ham Nation Wiki. Well, let's look at some photos now. We've received a few since our last video segment. Our first one is a blast from the past. That's what Greg called it, W7HRC. Check out this mag loop antenna. The Pennsylvania Railroad used it in the mid-40s. Now, that's a handy talkie. Greg said, thank God he didn't have a pacemaker. Okay. Next, we have a photo from Mike K7FLA. This is his 20-meter dipole. It's up in the attic. And a look now at the KFLA shack. Mike uses a Yaesu FT991 base station and a Wuxin KGUV9D handheld. He also uses a single-link USB modem for all his digital work. Well, Dennis, N7HRO, sent us some pictures too. Here's an Amico, 40 and 80 meter rig that he bought recently at a Ham Fest. That's one of the originals from back in the early days. Now they're bringing that back these days. That's really nice. And here's a look at the N7HRO shack. The main rig is an ICOM IC7610. He uses both the Heil Pro 7 and a Heil ICM microphones with it. His antenna tuner is a Heathkit SA2060 Alpha. His amplifier is an Ameritron AL811H. Other equipment in the N7HRO shack includes a Yaesu SP102. He's got a cross-needle power SWR meter, an Amitron ARB704, and a Yaesu FT817. Well, that's it for the photo watch. Remember, do send your shack photos to us at hamnationvideos@twit.tv, and we'll get them on Ham Nation for you. Looking forward to seeing them. Well, finally, this evening, Paul, K9PTF, who calls himself, at least in his signature line, a really old guy with a beard. Well, he created a video, too, out of a number of photos he took at the Birmingham Ham Fest recently. Did a great job, and here's Paul's video.
This is K9PTF, Paul in Chelsea, Alabama, and we're off to Trussville, Alabama, for the Birmingham Ham Fest, which was held on March 1st and 2nd. Yet this is the first time we used the Trustville facility, and it was held in the Civic Center, and we found that there was plenty of room for the vendors, and there was plenty of parking, and it was easy to get to. A pretty nice location all the way around. You were able to find things that you were looking for, like knobs, and the vendors were really, really helpful. They had brought all sorts of things and items that you were looking for, and they would even work with you about getting a good price. And as you know, that's one of the things you like to do at a ham fest, get a good price. Well, that was the end of Friday's session, and all too soon it was Saturday, and we started out in the Boneyard, and people were getting good deals out there. And the best part was it didn't rain. It threatened to, but it didn't do it. So we're getting ready to move inside here, but first we need to give a big thanks and a big shout out to AG5AT August, who got us this facility. And with that, let's move inside and see what's happening in the forums. We had the D-Star forum with LK4DJL, and people were really enjoying that forum. One of the most attended ones at the Hamfest. And then we also had Software and Hardware Made Easy. And we also had VE Testing. And a lot of people came and tried to upgrade or get their ticket. And after that, they were out there talking to the ARRL section manager, JVAN, W4JVM. And we had MFJ here. They had lots of fine equipment to sell. And people got together and were just talking, and gosh, they got more tickets in the barrels for the prizes and the drawing. And you never know what you're going to see at a Hamfest. Look at that, helmets and a helicopter and a propeller. Gosh, all kinds of great things there. And look, a new ham, somebody who got through and waiting for their call. And now it's time to do some of the drawings. And we had plenty of winners there. And we also had a special presentation for Don Keith, and he got the Citizenship Award, and all those people up there are previous winners. And Don is a co-author of Hunter Killer that was made into a movie, and he was there to answer your questions. People just got together and started sharing things and seeing what they could do together, and then there were the forums and this Fireside 2, the Alerts Forum. Sad thing about that was on Sunday, it actually got put to use. And we had the grand prize drawing for the IC7300, but they had to call them because they'd left too soon. And other prizes had been given out already. And hey, the Hamfest was over way too soon. We hope to see you again next year for the Birmingham Hamfest.
Well, thanks, Paul. We appreciate your coverage of the Birmingham Hamfest, and you can find Paul this evening probably on the Ham Nation After Show Net on D-Star Reflector 14 Charlie. Paul's one of the net controllers. Well, that's it for this fourth Ham Nation video segment of 2019. Hopefully we'll receive a few great videos from you we can feature for our audience real soon. Remember, we are dependent on you, the Ham Nation viewers, for your shack photos and for your videos. We'd love to showcase them for you. If you have questions about producing a video, please send them to me in an email, and we'll be glad to get the answers to you and give you any help you need. Well, it's time now to check out tonight's activity in the chat room, and to visit Amanda in our Ham Nation studio at Canyon City, Colorado. Hi, Amanda. Good evening.
Good evening, Dale. And hello, everyone else on the show tonight. Thanks, viewers, for all of your questions. I have some pretty fun ones, actually. Ray and George, get serious. We're ready for this. All right. So, very serious. Now, a lot of the questions in the chat room were basically about the 9700 saying, why no 220? Ray, I know you have a perfect explanation for this, so we're ready to hear it.
Well, it's a combination of a price point to hit and the number of units that we would not sell if it had 220, because it would be limited market to just the U.S. and Canada. 220 is not used globally like 2 meters, 70 centimeter, and 23 centimeter.
Well, there you have it. And another person, and this is a side note, another person in the chat room said, well, just put a cross band to 220 if that's what you're trying to do. Don't do that. Make sure you have a repeater owner's permission before you just set up a cross band on the repeater. Just putting that out there. Simplex, sure, fine, but watch out for those repeater owners. The next question here I had, this is actually not about the 9700 at all. This is kind of an interesting question. So, Ray, how many years in a row have you been to Dayton, and how many years have you made it out to the flea market in those years?
The flea market, zero. And as far as Dayton, I've been with ICOM 25 years at the end of May. And before that, I was with MFJ for 6 years. So there was 1 year in between all of that that I didn't go. So roughly 29, 30 years.
I understand. And George, what about you? Do you make it out to the flea market during Dayton?
I always try to make it to the flea market, provided that I can get out there. You know, I've been so busy with video in previous years that I didn't have much time to spend there, but I've learned to kind of adjust my schedule around where I make a little chunk of time so I can get in the flea market, because, you know, that's a big thing to me.
It's usually raining when you decide to go.
Well,
isn't
it is, yeah. So don't wait till the last day to decide to go to the flea market. Somebody might have already bought the good stuff.
Could be.
Oh, I bet. I mean, flea markets are a thing, and people line up outside waiting for that to open. So you lost all the good stuff. All right. So this isn't really a question, Ray, but this is more of a comment. I follow a ton of hams on Twitter. And one of the funny things is that all of a sudden in the last week or so, I've been seeing a lot of comments pop up about how they've switched to the 9700. Now, another very popular sat radio was, you know, the Yaesu 857 and some others, but that was a very nice portable one. People are switching to the 9700 to start working all of these new sats out there. Was that your guys' plan? Was that intentional, or is this just kind of happenstance?
Well, usually when you launch a product, you hope that you have a home run and you dominate the market. We hope that it has the same impact to the market as the 7300 has. I mean, that radio has just taken off. And even at Orlando, where the first show that we had the radio, we had the 7300 and 9700 side by side. And I mean, I've seen comments about, hey, can you advertise something else on Ham Nation other than the 9700? But it was surprising how many people would come by the booth and go, what's that next to my 7300? They'd not seen any of the marketing, had not heard any of the ads, but came over and took a look at it and go, well, I got to have one to go with my 7300. So that has been interesting to watch that.
I'm thrilled. And I'm looking at some of these reports and they say, I can't believe I just worked the satellite yesterday, almost the same pass. And I changed to the 9700 and my receive is 10 times better. So there's a lot to maybe look at on that. I think that's pretty cool. And working satellites is hard enough as it is. So, and there's a huge following of satellite operators out there, and especially with all the new satellites they've put out there. And I'm just trying to scroll through my Twitter feed as I'm doing this. And a lot of people say, and I'm not going to click on them, but it says, follow my video and listen to my audio and see my contacts. But it sounds like it's A-okay. So
Fun. So social media has put a whole new spin to releasing a product, because you'll have self-proclaimed experts telling you what they love, what they hate about it, what could have been better, how they would have designed it better. And it gets, you got to have thick skin at time to watch all of that, because the world's critiquing you through a keyboard.
What? These days? No. But, you know, if it's put on social media, it's true, right, Ray?
Yes, ma'am, very much so.
No, but I'm really seeing some positive reviews here. And by the way, Icon does not pay me. I'm just saying that I noticed this on my own social media Twitter feed. So I can't help but I can't ignore it. I'm noticing it. So there is a change coming. The next thing I wanted to address is a couple of people said during Dan's video about the ham estate sales, basically, why not just sell the equipment on eBay? My opinion personally is that it's way too hard to get some of these radios and such packaged for shipping. And it seems like too much of a hassle, and you have to charge too much for shipping for anyone to be interested in it.
Plus eBay fees. eBay fees are outlandish. Yeah.
What do you think? What else do you think about it, Don?
I've sold a couple of radios, not myself, but I sold a radio for a friend on eBay, and it was, quite frankly, a nightmare. I sold a classic car on eBay, and that went okay. I've bought three classic cars on eBay, and that went fine. but anytime I've sold anything, I sold an Xbox for my son, and the buyer tried to scam us, saying that he never got it and tried to get his money back. And we had the delivery receipt and everything else. So no, I would stay away from eBay at all costs. Yeah, just general rule of thumb, unless you're buying, and then be very careful. Selling on eBay, it's almost as scary as selling something on Craigslist. I have my wife's car on Craigslist right now, and within 10 minutes of putting it on Craigslist, the scammers were emailing me. I mean, it's absolutely nuts. So trying to sell anything online is insane. So unless you're going to something that is specifically ham radio related to sell ham radio stuff, like the places that that Dan pointed out, I would definitely stay with those resources and stay away from the, say, general audience venues for that.
Agreed, 100%. All right, what else do I have for tonight? One comment for Gordo. I know you're not here, Gordo, but K9PTF wanted you to know that he upgraded to Extra on Saturday, and he used all of your software, so he thanks you so much. Yay for upgrading to Extra. I know that's hard Woo-hoo. Work. Hard work. All right, that's all I have. Let me go over the nets. I know that we have the 20 meter net on 14268, and did I just say 40? 20 on 14268, 40 on 7192, and we've got the D Star on 14 Charlie. DMR was a no go last weekend. Last week, I guess they had some attack issues. How do you say that? The DDoS attacks. Anyhow, let's hope that's back up and running. So join us on the nets tonight. And I think that's all I've got. So who's wrapping it up tonight? Don, is that you?
I'll put a bow on it. We've had a good show tonight. Great to have Ray on, as always. And it's fun to have Ray in your shack. It's a little daunting. I've only had him in my shack that one time, and I was completely and totally out of my comfort zone. And it wasn't necessarily because it was Ray. Well, partially because it was Ray, but not necessarily because it was Ray. I'm used to where I'm a solo act, you understand. But to have Ray Novak in your shack is a cool honor, and I'm glad that he did. And he brought that.
And here I thought I was a little ray of sunshine.
Oh. I heard Ray say that it was a one-and-done time at your place, Don.
Yeah,
one-and-done at your house.
You know. Some people, it takes a little longer to run off, but Ray, apparently, he's a one-and-done guy, so that was fun. I'm looking forward to the next time he's in town, if that ever happens again. All right, guys, well, good stuff. It looks like a cool radio. Looking forward to seeing that in person at an upcoming Ham Fest. And good stuff from Dale, as always. Good stuff from Gordo. And next week, show number 400, Dr. T will be here live. We'll have many other surprises as well. So you're hearing it first right now. So we'll see you next week. Go get your Sunday clothes ready, because we want you looking nice for number 400 next week. And so for everybody involved with Ham Nation, in front of the cameras, behind the scenes, Victor and everybody at Twit, and everybody else, we thank you all for being here and giving us a reason to be with you on Wednesday nights since 2011. Yeah, since 2011. Wow. All right. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week for show number 473 from all of us here at Ham Nation. Good night.
7-3.